You are listening to Think Theory Radio. Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm Damian Perdue, your host and your archaeological guide on this audio ride of radio delights. And of course, I'm joined by Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
And today the C stands for cuneiform.
Isn't that what, like, ancient writings on tablet or something? My fourth grade social studies class or history class might have gotten me to that. But am I right?
Sanskrit. Oh, yes, Sanskrit, you are correct. Woo-hoo. You are correct, sir. And if that intro let you know what we're going to do, it's another episode of Awesome Archaeology. I don't have a cool...
Awesome Archaeology.
Woo-hoo. I gotta re-edit my intro for that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the weird science one. You know, kind of something.
I'm trying to, like awesome.
Can't imitate it directly.
Yeah. Awesome archaeology / tales to uncover. I don't know.
There you go. Mysterious tales.
Artifacts to uncover.
Mysterious stories. Actually, I do have a couple mysteries, archaeological mysteries.
Okay.
A tease. I guess they're all mysteries, really, at some point.
I usually distract you at this part of the show. You brought up, like, amazing stories. Do you remember amazing stories with...
I do.
Like, it was, like, Steven Spielberg,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, like, NBC, Channel 5 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I loved that show.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of his version of Twilight Zone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it didn't last too long, though, did it?
No, but I want to say there was, like, a spinoff. The family dog was, like, picked up later as, like, a cartoon, I think, later by
CBS. Oh, was it?
Yes, yeah.
Huh.
And that was, like, a short
that was on.
Yeah, there you go. You learn something new every day.
Talking about, like, TV archaeology.
I'm good for very useless things, and that's one of them. Like, 80s television.
That could be a whole other episode.
80s television.
80s anthropology.
Whatever happened to that train from Silver Spoons?
Right.
What was Willis talking about?
Right. Well, I guess this is somewhat of a transition I could make or segue, because this actually was the first story I wanted to do, and it's about how technology, since we're talking about technology, television, has assisted in the uncovering of ancient cuneiform writings.
Okay.
And it's actually in the, not in the television form, but in the artificial intelligence version of technology. And I got this from NewScientist.com. It says the secrets of ancient cuneiform texts are being revealed by AI. So much of the world's first writing carved into clay tablets remains undeciphered, but the AI is helping piece together these ancient Mesopotamian scripts. And this was, it's a archaeologist named Irving Finkel from the British Museum. It's a very English name, I feel like.
Irving Finkel. Oh, that sounds like like Northeastern Jewish, like upper west side of Manhattan.
You might be right. And he studies cuneiform tablets such as the Prayer to the God of Marduk. Okay. Marduk was one of the original gods, the OG gods. And he's an assistant keeper of ancient Mesopotamian script, languages, and cultures at the museum. And he's one of only a handful of people in the world who can actually read the cuneiform. Says the system of writing was deciphered 165 years ago, which I believe was the, the Rosetta Stone and stuff like that. But the majority of the texts that have been used have never been translated into modern languages because it's a very complicated task and not many people can do it except for somebody like Finkel. But now, thanks to these developments in technology with AI, computers are being trained to read and translate cuneiform and put fragmented tablets back together to recreate ancient libraries and even predict bits of missing texts. These tools are enabling the earliest works of literature to be read in full for the first time since antiquity, giving insights into stories that later appeared in the Bible and shedding light on civilizations at the dawn of history. So that's pretty cool. They're filling in the gaps of human knowledge with modern technology. And it should be pretty cool because that's, you know, that's one of the things a lot of people don't realize is how much of these Sumerian texts and cuneiform tablets are actually the original stories that ended up in the Bible and later other religious texts.
As stories get passed down, word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. Like the Epic of Gilgamesh, you know, kind of became the
for those of you playing
flood of Noah. Yeah, it's always a good one. I just like saying it. The Epic of Gilgamesh. It's very
well. Who's the Sumerian god? I know they had several, but or were they monotheistic?
Well, you had Anu, you had Enki, Enlil.
Okay, they were not monotheistic then.
No, well, you kind of did in a way because Anu was like the main god.
Okay,
and then Enlil, Enki, and Nineveh or something like that was the female, like the wife of Anu.
Okay.
Nineveh, I think it is. But yeah, so you kind of in a way, I mean, you had the different gods, but they were kind of underneath. It was a hierarchy more so than just the one god. But a lot of it, if you really get into that, like, I mean, kind of sidetrack, I could do a whole episode on that, but it's, you know, the parallels between like the Hebrew Bible and you know, the Christian version, New Testament, and these the Sumerian texts. You see the parallels in the stories, and also like the how many different gods they had compared to like the archangels and their kind of descriptions.
Oh, so people got recast.
Yeah. Oh yeah, people got recast. But they almost had the same, they just got renamed because they kind of had the same roles, like a lot, you know, like one was a carpenter, one was a fisherman, one was this, and they taught humans how to do this and you know. And then along came Jesus. But I do have other stories that upend our belief in, it would totally upend your belief in religion if you're religious, but our kind of, our human history.
I don't know if people are that easily swayed though
by archaeology.
One host's take on a radio station that like, hey, I just poked a hole in your religion. It's like, no, you didn't. No.
Well, it's not me poking the hole. Yeah, it's archaeology, man.
I know.
Science.
I know cognitive dissonance.
But that's the one thing, you know, like if you get into any kind of archaeological or anthropological evidence, you're going to go way past any dates of anything religious, you know. But these couple stories that I have found actually poke holes in even anthropology itself and our understanding of where humans were, and also Neanderthals, which I find pretty interesting that, and I've talked about it before, but how in recent history we're like, we're kind of rediscovering the Neanderthals. Like we always just thought of them as the typical caveman kind of, you know, stereotype or whatever. But now we figure out that, hey, wait, they actually had kind of, they were a culture, you know, they were very similar to Homo sapiens. But this is another discovery that pushes dates back. And I got this from bigthink.com. It's a cave in France changes what we thought we knew about Neanderthals. It says in a French cave deep underground, scientists have discovered what appears to be a 176,000-year-old man-made structures. That's 150,000 years earlier than any that have been discovered.
Wow.
Anywhere before in the world. And they could have only been built by Neanderthals. And these were a group of people that never before we even thought that they could build structures or anything. So this, you know, obviously could create a major shift in our understanding of them. And this is, you know, this coincides with other discoveries that have been found with of, you know, cave paintings that possibly Neanderthals made and musical instruments and kind of cultural artifacts. According to The Atlantic, the cave, the Bruniquel cave, I think is how you say it, or in French, it's probably Bruniquel.
Okay. Yeah, that cave.
Yeah, Bruniquel.
Bruniquel.
Was first explored in 1990 by Bruno Kowalczewski.
Kowalczewski.
Kowalczewski, or Kowalczewski. who was 15 at the time.
Oh, wow.
It's a young archaeologist. It's a young Indiana Jones.
Or some kid that went spelunking and
exactly,
accidentally found
right.
something. Yeah.
It's probably his backyard.
Yeah. Go get the football. All right. Because French people play football.
Yeah. Well, different football.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's different for us.
Yeah. Go get the soccer.
Let's not get into the soccer talk.
Yeah. I'd know nothing about that.
But I guess he spent 3 years digging away at rubble, covering a space through which his father felt air moving. Hmm. And then members of a local caving club managed to squeeze through the narrow 30-meter-long tunnel, and they arrived in a passageway. They followed it past pools of water and old animal bones for over 330 meters before coming into a large chamber and a scene they had no reason to expect. Stalagmites that someone had broken into hundreds of small pieces, most which were arranged into two rings, around one roughly 6 meters across and one 2 meters wide, with the remaining pieces stacked into one of four piles or leaning against the rings. There were also indications of fires and burnt bones. A professional archaeologist, not the amateur 15-year-old kid, Francois Rousseau, determined with carbon dating that a burnt bear bone found in the chamber was 47,600 years old, which made the stalagmite structures older than any known cave painting. But then in 1999, lifelong caver Sophie Verheyden, the team she assembled eventually determined that the stalagmites had been broken up by people 176,000 years ago. Hmm. So over 100,000 years, 130,000 years more. It says there weren't any signs Neanderthals lived in the cave, so it's a mystery what they were up to down there. So it makes it even seem even more likely it was a place of ritual or possibly art. Maybe this was just some Neanderthal sculpture.
I was thinking maybe a Neanderthal fight club, but...
Or a fight club. Yeah. Like the ring was like where they would fight inside.
We've already broken the rules about Neanderthal fight club.
Well, we're not in the Neanderthal fight club, so we can talk about
it. Not anymore, we're not.
Right.
We got kicked out.
Verheyden thinks it's unlikely that a solitary artist created the tableau, and so an organized group of skilled workers must have been involved. And when you see such a structure so far into the cave, you think of something cultural or religious, she said. Whatever they built, it reveals some big surprises about Neanderthals. They had fire, they built things, and likely used tools. That's pretty interesting. And then also, you know, like I was saying, you add this to the recent discoveries that suggest they buried their dead, they made art, they possibly even had language. The Neanderthals don't seem as dumb as we once thought.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they find a Neanderthal pyramid, that's when I'll be really interested.
Is that going to, like, just pop up out of nowhere?
200,000-year-old pyramid.
Discovered.
Don't get me started about the underwater pyramids,
oh,
man.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so then, if that's the case, would then Atlantis be direct descendants of Neanderthals? Find out on the next Theory Radio.
Oh, are we going to break?
Yeah.
Just pushing us to break?
Yeah, why not?
I had more mysterious things.
No, go ahead. Break or no break?
No break. I'm breaking the rules. I'm not going to break. I'm breaking the rules, man.
We're just going to plow right through
this. Yeah, forget
one.
Those breaks. I'm sick of those. All right, one more, then we'll go to break.
All right.
Because it kind of ties into this.
Well, that's good, because I got to queue up the break anyway.
There you go. So you can help you reload.
You did. Literally. And
so in this one, I got from the amazing news site, newsyahoo.com.
Okay.
Yahoo News.
Hey, they're legitimate news.
Hey, they're legit enough. Mammoth bones and ghost footprints add to the heated debate about the first humans in North America. It says these mammoth bones and ghost footprints, not actually footprints of ghosts. They're just ghost footprints.
And when you say mammoth footprints.
Mammoth bones.
Like a mammoth.
Not really big.
No, it's literally a woolly mammoth.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And also pretty big because they were big.
They're mammoth. They were huge.
The fossilized bones in particular could suggest people lived in North America tens of thousands of years before the generally accepted date for the arrival of the first Native Americans at about 10,000 BC. Researchers say radiocarbon dates of chemicals in the mammoth bones from a mother and her calf indicate the animals lived about 37,000 years ago in what is now New Mexico. Patterns of fractures in the bones show they were butchered by humans, who must therefore have lived there at the same time, the researchers added. But the findings are disputed by some other scientists. Those other scientists, always disputing things, who say the fractures could have been caused naturally. The latest ghost footprints, meanwhile, were found a few weeks ago on an Air Force missile range in a desert in Utah. Scientists think they're about 12,000 years old, but this is only the second time that such footprints have been found, and they support the discovery last year of ghost footprints in New Mexico thought to be at least 21,000 years old, although that finding, too, is disputed. The mammoth bones at what is called the Hartley Site in northern New Mexico and rocks high above the tributary to the Rio Grande is where they are located. The researchers say they're confident of their dating and the interpretation that the fractures on them were caused by repeated impacts with sharp objects during their deliberate butchering. So there we go. Somewhat of a mystery. I guess it depends on who you talk to. But I'm sure there will be more things found that will add evidence. I personally believe the humans were here long before we think. But we shall see.
Yeah.
I'm no expert.
Well, the nice thing was, like, as technology advances, they can kind of help us isolate that instead of, like, I don't know, following some sort of book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also, too, I don't really know enough about radiocarbon dating to know, like, how far that technology has come, you know? I mean, is the radiocarbon dating technology the same as it was 50 years ago? Or is, I would assume that it's much more advanced now, right?
Yeah, but how much more advanced could it be?
Yeah, I mean, you're just dating carbon, but who knows? Maybe the AI is helping them. AI will save us all.
I don't even understand how dating carbon works in this day and age.
Can't even get carbon to call me back.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break, and we'll be back with some mysterious archaeology and much more on Think Theory Radio. Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. Today we are doing awesome archaeology and talking about some of the latest discoveries. Some of them are very new, like some of the ones I just talked about, but some of them have been around and are still a mystery. And since we were talking about people being in the Americas earlier than possibly thought, I figured let's stay in the Americas. And one of them, which I've never heard of before, is called Mystery Hill. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Or AKA America's Stonehenge.
See, Mystery Hill sounds like a bad, like, late 90s horror film, like in the teenage horror.
Oh, totally.
Genre. Yeah. Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze are.
Now remade as a Netflix series.
Yeah. With way better production.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. No, that's all joking. You called it Mystery Hill or?
America's Stonehenge.
America's Stonehenge, which I would have assumed is not Mystery Hill. I would have thought maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, so Mystery Hill was the original name. And then in 1982, they renamed it America's Stonehenge, although it's not really
Stonehenge-y?
No, not at all. Not really. Other than that it's stone monoliths.
It's probably like a tourist campaign.
It totally,
or
I think, was. It's in New Hampshire, in North Salem, New Hampshire.
Yeah, what else do they have there?
What are you talking about? That's the cradle of colonial American life.
New
Salem
Hampshire?
Winch hunts. And
wasn't
stuff.
Salem in Massachusetts, though?
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Different Salem.
And I was going to say,
this is North Salem.
The man in the mountain, but that was Vermont that since crumbled off. But
that's right.
Yeah, New Hampshire doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
Concord, and that's about it.
Well, they have Mystery Hill.
They have Mystery Hill, yeah. So if you're ever passing through New Hampshire for a minute.
Yeah, I'd like to check it out. The pictures look kind of cool.
Truth be told, I would like to go out to that part of the country. I've never been outside of Boston. I've never been to New England.
I have been to New England. Well, Rhode Island.
Yes, that's
counts,
technically.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So I've been to Providence.
Which is neither a road nor an island.
I actually drove by Mystic Pizza.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
It's not just a
no, it's actually a real, it's a real place.
Okay.
We didn't stop, though. But I would stop at Mystery Hill, these megaliths. And I think one of the reasons they renamed it was because a family that bought the property, their last name was Stone. Something by Stonehenge kind of thing. But it definitely was like a tourist kind of thing. Now, the mystery is that no one knows who made it. And nobody really knows how old it is. Of course, you get the, you know.
This is kind of like the Cahokia Mounds sort of thing.
Well,
like,
no, because Cahokia, we kind of know. Yeah. I mean, we don't know exactly.
Saying, like, it could be that era, because isn't that like a long time ago?
Yes, except the difference, though, with this is it's not typical of Native American building. Like,
yeah,
this is.
The Cahokia Mounds are mound dwelling.
They're mound dwellings, more pyramidic. Yeah. These are stone monoliths that are more similar to the dolmens and cairns in Ireland and Norway. They're more like those kind of stone structures.
Okay.
So there's debate as if,
like, drunken Vikings came along.
Yeah, Vikings, or possibly some. There are some people who think these Irish monks got here and built these. Some people think they're 4,000 years old. Some people think they're only from colonial times. There is some weird hieroglyphs that some people think is the Ogham alphabet, which is the ancient Celtic alphabet. And then there seems to be astronomical alignment that the megaliths mark cross-quarter holidays, which these are typical, kind of celebrated by the Celtics.
We're going to find out this was like Rand McNally in the 60s, probably.
No, it goes back farther.
Okay, it goes back
to at least the 30s.
Pokes a hole in that theory.
And then there is the carbon, you know, that carbon dating, you know, as opposed to Tinder. carbon 14 results coincide with the date of a major immigration by Celts, according to a book by so-and-so that. They're just trying to sell a book. So I guess it was in the 30s that they first kind of discovered these. Well, you know, it was like they don't know if the colonists, the colonialists built these as root cellars. But there has been carbon dating of tools and objects near the site that do go back 2,000 to 4,000 years. And then you have these astronomical alignments, but it's possible that could just be, you know, because you have so many different stones in around the area. Because it's actually, it's a kind of a big site. It's a 30-acre area. If you look at it, they do kind of look similar to the stone dolmens, and which are those kind of burial structures in Northern Europe, where it's like the two stone slabs and one over the top, or sometimes there's like four stone slabs and one over the top. Looks like a little hut, right?
Okay.
But then there's people that believe that, you know, it's all a hoax. Who really built it? There's a lot of, you know, it's like the Native Americans at the time could have been, you know, working on it, but they're really... isn't much other evidence that points to like this kind of stone on stone workmanship in other areas by Native Americans. And then you do have these kind of similarities but to Europe. So, you know, and then you get like kind of the even way out there people like, oh, it's the Phoenicians came all the way from the Mediterranean because of these glyphs that supposedly were found on there. So Jonathan Petit was a shoemaker and his family lived on the site through much of the 19th century. And some people think that they built the structures. And then the Stone family took over. And Dennis Stone, who's the son, thinks that some of the structures were built by Petit, but not all of them. So it's an interesting place. And there's actually in that area, that northeast area, you know, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, all around there, there's actually dozens of these weird kind of out of place stone structures. There's a lot of stone walls. There's just kind of dolmens and cairns. And Now, we have legitimately found Viking structures in Newfoundland that are, you know, thousands of years old. So it's possible that other Europeans made it over and built these things, but nobody really knows. There's inconclusive evidence, so it's still a mystery. Mystery Hill can still retain its mystery status. And speaking of other mysteries, in the Americas, but a little further south down in Mexico.
Okay, a little further south.
A little further. Not that far if you're in a plane.
And if you're comparing the rest of the world, I mean.
It's right. Exactly. There is. Okay, so there's a mystery within a mystery wrapped in a mountain with a pyramid inside. And there's actually is a giant pyramid hidden inside of a mountain. It's actually, this is the cool thing about that. Now, there's two parts to this story. But the one part, the first part that I'll get into, which is actually verified and is, you know, in archaeological knowledge and it's a heritage site, World Heritage Site, is technically it's the largest pyramid in the world. And most people have never heard of it. And the temple is called Cholula, and it actually dwarfs the Great Pyramid.
I put that on my tacos.
Hey, Cholula is a good hot sauce. I'll agree with you there. Although I'm more partial to El Yucateco.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
Habanero all the way.
I like that one. And the really dark, the Chipotle black, it's like almost black sauce one.
Oh, yeah,
that's really
from
good.
El Yucateco, yeah.
It's a triple X Mayan recipe. That's what it says on the bottle.
Yeah, I've had it. No, I was a little side story about that particular hot sauce. I was at a grocery store probably like 10 years ago or so, and I was picking out, I think, either the green or the red, which I normally went to. I try to keep at least one of each in my cabinet at all times. And this guy was like, hey, if you really like hot stuff, like hot stuff, you gotta try the black stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, okay. It's a little smokier. It's a little, yeah, I like it. But I prefer the red. I think that's the best one they've got.
Okay. Yeah. I actually got their Caribbean one. That's actually pretty good. It's a little heat, but it's a little more savory.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
I actually had a bar that I used to go to that would always keep the Mayan triple X hot one in stock just for me.
Just for you,
I was the only one that would use it.
On my Beyond Burger. You could take on their marketing department and you'd like to sponsor Think Theory Radio, please reach out to WCPT 820.
You know, hey, I'll even just take free bottles of hot sauce.
A couple, but to make it two, because there's a co-host.
Yes. I would like one of the little variety packs. Can we get two of the variety packs?
Give me a flight of hot sauce.
So back to the real Cholula, which I believe the hot sauce was named after.
Probably.
This is actually a really cool pyramid in, where is it at? It's Cholula. I'm trying to find the state. Okay, and this article does not say the state exactly, but it says when the Spaniards came there, actually Hernan Cortez marched through Cholula, they did not notice that there was this huge pyramid because by the time the Spaniards had got there, this pyramid had been abandoned and had a lot of foliage and stuff over it. Kind of, they believe it was probably built by the same culture that built the Pyramid of the Sun and Teotihuacan, the huge site outside of Mexico City. It's very similar to that. But this pyramid was kind of built into a mountain. So the exposed part was on the underside of the mountain. And by the time the Spaniards got there, it was more used of, in ritualistic purposes and stuff. So it wasn't very common. It wasn't this huge pyramid that just stood out, you know, the ground. So the Spaniards missed it. But they did build a church on top of the hill that's actually the pyramid.
Okay.
So you have this at the bottom of the hill, you have this pyramidic structure. You see the stairs and everything like that and the steps. And then you have the hill that's still covered in dirt and trees. And then the top of the hill, you have a Catholic church. Which is kind of interesting. And they even made a correlation because I forget the name of the goddess or like the Virgin of Remedies is the church is named for, which I'm not familiar enough with Catholicism to know who that is.
Never heard of that one, the Virgin of Remedies?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But, well, I mean, isn't it all Mary then if it's the virgin?
I would think so, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there were other virgins, just only one blessed, right. You know, miracle-working one. You're looking for Puebla is the state that it's
okay,
in
Puebla, yeah. Nice. Good finding.
It's also near the city of Puebla as well.
Yes. It says, beneath the tiny church, hiding under tufts of grass, trees, and soils, ancient pyramid, truly gigantic proportions, standing 450 meters wide and 66 meters tall from end to end. The Great Pyramid of Cholula is equivalent to 9 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Wow.
And it's, like I said, it's the most obscure temple like no one's ever heard of. It's the largest pyramid on the planet, with a base 4 times larger than the Great Pyramid of Giza and nearly twice the volume. It's the largest, they believe it's the largest monument ever constructed anywhere by any civilization to this day. To the locals, it's known as Tlachihualtepetl, which I'm sure I butchered that, but which means man-made mountain in Nahuatl. Story goes until locals began construction of an insane asylum in 1910. Nobody knew it was a pyramid. Certainly by the time Cortez and men got, they didn't know because, like I said, it was totally covered. They found in excavations, they have found deformed skulls of decapitated children. But they don't know who built it, don't know why, but they think it probably the construction began around 300 BC. According to a myth, it was built by a giant or a tribe of giants. Most likely the city inhabitants known as the Choluteca were a cosmopolitan mix, a bunch of different tribes and people mixed in together and became the Choluteca.
I was wondering if, like, the Olmec heads had anything to do with it, but that seems like that's a different area of Mexico.
Well, you know what's interesting is actually there was not the Olmecs, but there was an Olmeca, which was a different tribe that actually lived there at a certain period of time.
Did they make giant heads as well?
They did not,
okay.
That I know of. Cortez called it the most beautiful city outside of Spain when he got to Cholula.
And then
just murdered everyone.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then made them destroy everything and, like, rebuild it into a church.
Yeah.
This place is beautiful. Let's tear it all down and kill all the people.
Thanks, Hernando. Yeah.
But now the other part of the story is that there's a hill nearby that if you look at it, looks like a pyramid, and the locals call it Teotan. And they say that this is an ancient pyramid that would be even bigger than the Cholula one. And that they found a map from about 450 years ago, an Aztec map, which depicts a pyramid in the same spot as where this mountain is.
Okay.
And at the base of the mountain or the hill, there's actually, you know, ceremonial objects, there's bones, there's different fragments and stuff found. And at the top, there is a kind of altar, but it could have just been that they were using the hill as a kind of ritualistic place. But there are definitely, as we've seen in recent times with the using laser imaging and satellites, that a lot of these hills in Mexico's are actually pyramids. So it doesn't stand to reason that it could be another pyramid underneath. So it'd be interesting. We'll see what they find out. But now, unfortunately, the Mexican Heritage, World Heritage Organization, INAH, it's INAH, they don't feel it's important or they don't have the money to excavate. So unless they can, we can use this laser technology to figure it out, we might not know if it's actually a pyramid or not. So that part is still a mystery, and the mystery also of who built them. So before we get into some more and before we take a break, let's take a phone call.
Right now, just 1 second, okay?
Who do we got on the air?
We've got Tom from Elgin.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Hey, David. There's a belief, and it's actually pretty strong, that locals when the conquering quote-unquote heroes would come into an area. They would build their churches on top of religious structures.
Oh, yeah.
That and basically saying that our God is better than your God.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would even they would even go so far to make them deconstruct a pyramid, take the whole thing down, and then build a church out of the deconstructed pyramid.
Exactly, using the stones and basically like rubbing in the face of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. I love your show.
Oh, thanks.
And once again, you got to have more than, you got to have more hours.
Okay. I appreciate that.
I know it would tire you out, but like I said, I can't wait for 6 o'clock for when you come on.
Anytime, man.
You go into the nighttime because I know you have things. You got to start earlier because I mean, there's so much you got to say and so much you know that just inspires people and go. And what, I'm the guy that said makes things that make you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. we'll have to get that song. Load that song up for the end of the show.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. Hey, I really appreciate it.
All right, bye.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I have maybe a couple more mysteries and some really interesting discoveries in more awesome archaeology on Think Theory Radio. Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. Today we are talking about some awesome archaeology and mysterious legends. I'm working on it. I'll figure that out. let's see.
Not so uniform cuneiform. I don't know.
Oh, I like it. Rhymes. I'm always down with anything that rhymes.
Just spitting ideas.
Freestyling over there. Mm-hmm. Pauly C got bars. let's stick with some pyramids, because I love pyramids.
Yeah.
You're playing along at home. What about, now I just talked about the largest pyramid in the world, possibly the largest structure ever built by humans, being down in Mexico. What about a pyramid in the Americas as old as ancient Egypt?
A pyramid in the Americas that's as old as ancient Egypt.
Or as old as the oldest pyramid in Egypt.
That we know.
That we know of.
And it's not the Cahokia Mounds.
No. Okay. Those aren't that old.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty old, but they're not
older than Egypt old, right. Or whatever. Yeah.
But this is actually in Peru.
Oh, when you said the Americas, I was, thinking very...
South America.
United States centric because...
This is America.
I'm a United States.
Actually.
That's
always one of the funny things. Like, how are we the Americans, but it's all Americas?
Well, that and like Vespucci
South
never,
American.
Vespucci never discovered this continent, did he? Why are we naming things after him?
I know. And that's actually disputed, too, that the name actually comes from him. There's different theories on that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Google it.
right now
while I talk about the pyramid. So this is actually, this is another kind of mystery, too. It's a little known civilization in the Americas built pyramids as old as ancient Egypt. It's considered the cradle of civilization in the Americas. Speaking of Americas. The sacred city of Corral Supe is a 5,000-year-old archaeological site, and it's situated on a dry desert terrace overlooking the green valley of Supe River in Peru. And it's a complex of pyramids and sunken circular courts that was only discovered in 1948. It's home to an extraordinary complex of ancient monumental architecture, and they think it was built around 2600 B.C., around the same period as the first Egyptian pyramid. They believe it to be the largest and most sophisticated urban center established by Western Hemisphere's earliest known civilization. And the foundation is roughly equal to 4 football fields, which I don't know if that's bigger than 4 What was the other one? Four Olympic pools?
Nine Olympic sets. Hold up, I can figure this
that's,
out.
It's that's maybe, a math. That's what it was.
No, what's the... So, I believe a Olympic-sized swimming pool in length is 100 meters.
Okay.
And a football field is 120 yards if you include the end zones. Mm-hmm. So... I believe a yard and a meter are very similar. I want to.
Okay.
Either way, we know that the nine swimming pools are longer than the four football fields because they're about similar. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah.
You figured it out. Nice.
And even if I'm wrong about it, it's either 50 or 100 for the Olympic sized swimming pool. Uh-huh. And then
it would still be bigger.
450 meters versus 120 yards.
Right.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that it's like metaphorical sizes, you know, like nine pools or football fields. Like, just what's the like just
our feet? Ignorant sports centric brains can wrap our heads.
Probably,
around, you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's the image can quickly pop in your head more so than if you said like it's 2,000 feet.
Yeah,
you're like, what is that? I don't know. But if you say four football fields, you're like, oh, okay.
Well, if you said like 2,000 feet, you could also say like about a half. You know, that's a little under a half mile. But if you said,
but
like,
you can't picture a mile in like a mental image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as you can a football field or a pool.
Yeah.
Right.
That and just Olympic sized swimming pool just sounds so. Like, just dominant,
right. I think it's the
know?
Olympic part, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We have a standard, and it's big, and right. It's filled with lots of water. And we measure things with it.
Mm-hmm. Including these pyramids.
Yes.
Right. The biggest pyramid is known as the Pyramid Mayor, and it's 100 feet tall. The site has been estimated to be between 4,000 and 5,000 years old. Making its construction at least as old as the Step Pyramid of Saqqara, which is the oldest known pyramid in ancient Egypt. And you can look it up and find there's actually pictures of it. It looks pretty cool. It's very dusty looking, but you can see the structures. They're very, I mean, it's clear as day what it is. And it's spelled Caral-Supe. Yeah, it flourished around the same time Egyptians were constructing the pyramid. Caral society's complexity as a socio-political state is reflected in the city structure and architecture. Artifacts discovered at the site, such as Quipu, which is the same knot system the Incas subsequently employed to store information, demonstrate the civilization's influence on succeeding Andean civilizations. So these were the OG South American pyramid builders. And there is, the Caral was the first of over two dozen fully excavated sites along Peru's central coast known as the Norte Chico region. Archaeologists think the sites collectively reflect the America's earliest core of civilization, which existed from 3000 to 1800 BC and was totally uninfluenced by outside factors. It flourished over 4,000 years before the mighty Incan Empire began. That's pretty amazing, 4,000 years before.
Yeah.
And then sticking to this kind of area, there is the oldest sun observatory, also in the Americas, also in Peru, built by an unknown culture. I'm just making an assumption, but I would feel like it's in the same area as these ancient pyramids that are pretty old. I would kind of, I don't know, in my mind, I would think that it's the same people, but who knows? This is long before the Incas rose to power in Peru, began to celebrate their sun god. A little-known civilization was building the earliest known astronomical observatory in the Americas. Now, although this one is not as old as sites like Stonehenge, these ancient ruins known as Chanquilo are considered a masterpiece of human creative genius, holding unique features not seen anywhere else in the world. And this is also based in the coastal desert of Peru. The archaeological site famously contains a row of 13 stone towers, which together trace the horizon of a hill north to south like a toothy bottom grin. Apart from the remarkable structure known as the 13 Towers, the ruins of the observatory also include a triple-walled hilltop complex called the Fortified Temple and two building complexes called the Observatory and the Administrative Center. Completed over 2,300 years ago and abandoned in the first century of the Common Era, the site has remained a mystery to travelers for centuries. This is only official excavations began at the turn of the 21st century. So, I mean, this just within the last 20 years, they started excavating it. And that's when the archaeologists realized that this was a sun observatory. As the sun rises in the east, an orb of light emerges somewhere along the ridge of the towers. As the year proceeds, so too does the position of the sunrise, almost as though the light is flossing the toothy horizon. And it says, these towers were so carefully placed that when an onlooker stands at the specific observation point below the ridge, they can predict the time of year within 2 or 3 days, based just on sunrise or sunset. Hmm. The observation point looking west towards the ridge uses the sunset. At what's thought to be the east observation point, all that's left is the incomplete stone outline of a room, but it's in a symmetrical location and would have been used for sunrise. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And sticking with astronomical observatories, this one is not as old. Still fairly old, but really, really cool. And I would definitely like to travel here. I mean, I'd like to go to all these places, but this one piques my interest. And I got this from BBC. Actually, that last one I got from Science Alert, just so you know. And this one is India's Mysterious Gateway to the Stars. And this was, it was only built 300 years ago. It's Jaipur's Jantar Mantar, I think is how you pronounce it. It's an outdoor complex filled with gargantuan astronomy tools designed to be used by the naked eye. And they're still accurate. It says, trying to find the person who built this. The site, it's a 300-year-old collection of 20 scientific sculptures called Yantra that can measure the positions of stars and planets and precisely tell the time. It says they are ingenious architectural solutions to understanding the mechanics of astronomy, as well as key tools for traditional Hindu astrologers to craft birth charts and forecast auspicious dates. It was in 1727 when the region's king, Sawai Jai Singh, conceived Jaipur as his capital and as the country's first planned city. He wanted to design it based on the principles of Vastu Shastra, which draw on nature, astronomy, and astrology to inform architecture and placement. He realized that to perfectly align Jaipur with the stars, aid in astrological practices, and predict key weather events for crops, he would need instruments that were accurate and accessible. After he sent research teams across Central Asia and Europe to collect data based on the knowledge of Islamic and European scientists, Sawai Jai Singh found discrepancies among the readings of the brass instruments that were widely used at the time. To increase accuracy, he scaled up the size of the tools, stabilized them by reducing moving parts, and made them resistant to wear and weather by fashioning them out of marble and local stone. Then he used these innovations to build 5 outdoor observatories in the Indian cities of Jaipur, Delhi, Ujjain, Varanasi, and Mathura. And it says 4 Jantar Mantar survive, but the one in Jaipur, completed in 1734, is the biggest and most comprehensive. And now it's also a World Heritage Site. And it's still used to this day by local scientists and astronomers and astrologers. But if you look up the pictures, it looks like a really cool place. I definitely want to check it out. So that's it for Awesome Archaeology and Think Theory Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again next Saturday and every Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WCPT 820 Think Theory Radio. In the boom.